This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, April 22nd, Earth Day 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. Support for KUAF comes from Walton Art Center, presenting singer-songwriter Delbert McClinton, Sunday, May 5th at 7 p.m. This Grammy Award winner will perform his classics, which span more than five decades, plus new music from recent albums. Tickets and more information available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the possibility of a new high-voltage transmission line charges up local residents. Also, information about the nonpartisan organization Free and Equal, the latest installment of Arkansongs, Roby Brock has business and political headlines from around the state, and more. First, the unemployment rate remains lower than the national average at 7.2%. The Department of Workforce Services reported a 7,600-person decrease in the number of employed Arkansans, but due to retirement or the decision to leave work. Kimberly Friedman, spokeswoman for Workforce Services, says there was an increase in the trade, transportation, and utilities sector.
A majority of the increase that did occur in trade, transportation, and utilities is attributed to retail trade, and that's related in a large part to the seasonal hiring at building materials, garden supply stores, and at general merchandise stores.
The increase is attributed to spring cleaning and do-it-yourself projects. With more art and cultural destinations in the state, Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe is vaunting the new face of the state's tourism industry. In his weekly radio address, he says while Bentonville's Crystal Bridges opened the eyes of many to Arkansas's arts community, even more new venues and programs continue to improve the quality of life in communities across the state, attracting economic development and encouraging creative thinking.
The Fort Smith Regional Arts Museum unveiled its brand new state-of-the-art facility in January. In 2011, Stuttgart welcomed the Grand Prairie Center, a new setting for the performing arts. In 2009, the Museum of Contemporary Art opened its doors in the newly renovated Ozark Bathhouse in Hot Springs. Longtime staples of Arkansas arts scene continue to inspire patrons. For example, this summer, the Arkansas Arts Center in Little Rock will be one of four institutions in North America hosting an art collection from the world-renowned Kenwood House in London.
Governor Beebe says art venues in the state are becoming an integral part of Arkansas's reputation. According to Jonathan Martin, a reporter for Politico, the outcome of Senator Mark Pryor's re-election campaign will be key to seeing if Democrats can still be competitive in the state or whether there is a political realignment and Arkansas is truly joining the rest of the South in moving toward the Republican Party. Martin notes Pryor has several factors working in his favor, such as family name recognition, a moderate voting record, and the fact that he keeps a fairly low profile. In addition, Pryor raised nearly $2 million in the first quarter of this year. Martin asks if Pryor can't win as a Democrat with a lot of money, who can?
$2 million in the first quarter, like the year before his election, is a pretty significant sum, and especially for a senator who is not in the leadership, who is not a chairman of an A-list committee. But you know, the fact that he is starting off with that kind of war chest, it is all about sending a message to Republicans who are thinking about getting in that they're going to have to raise a lot of cash to be competitive.
But Martin notes money is not everything in politics, pointing to former Senator Blanche Lincoln's re-election campaign in 2010. He says the political environment that year clearly trumped what Lincoln had in the bank. The National Journal recently published the results of a survey of Democratic insiders that names Senator Pryor as the most vulnerable senator in Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, Republican U.S. Representative Tom Cotton has frequently been mentioned as a potential challenger to Pryor. As the University of Arkansas student population grows, so does the university's focus on furthering diversity on the Fayetteville campus. As a result, UH Chancellor G. David Gerhart has named Charles F. Robinson II the Vice Chancellor for Diversity and Community. Robinson, who has worked in higher education for 22 years and joined the U of A in 1999, is a professor of history and has served as director of the college's African and African American Studies program. He currently serves as vice provost for diversity affairs in the Division of Academic Affairs and has been awarded the Fulbright College Master Teacher Award, the Arkansas Alumni Distinguished Teacher Award, and the Student Alumni Board Teacher of the Year. Robinson has also received the Martin Luther King Jr. Lifetime Achievement Award from the MLK Council of Northwest Arkansas. His promotion takes effect on July 1st. Two events in the coming weeks will help raise money and awareness for the Fayetteville Animal Shelter. According to a news release from the city, students at Vandergriff Elementary are collecting used books for the annual Charlie Brown Book Sale, which is reportedly the largest single annual fundraiser for the shelter. Gently used children's and adult books can be dropped off at the front office of the school or animal shelter before the sale, May 22nd through the 24th. This Saturday, students in the Education Department at the U of A will host the first annual Fayetteville Paw Fest, which will raise money for spay and neuter operations at the shelter. Donations collected at the event will provide free spaying or neutering services for low to moderate income residents of the city. Tomorrow night, the Hog Pen at Baum Stadium will become the Dog Pen for the second time in stadium history for Woofstock 2013. Hog fans will be allowed to bring their dogs into the area behind the left field fence. Only one dog per ticket holder will be allowed, and dog wranglers will be required to fill out an application before entering the stadium. The Dog Day of Baseball comes after a weekend of wins for the Razorbacks. While the Diamond Hogs lost Friday's game against Texas A&M 5-3, the team rallied on Saturday for a 12-2 win, and yesterday the team's pitching staff held A&M at bay long enough for a 2-1 win, clinching the series. With the pair of wins, the Razorbacks are now 27-15 on the season and 11-7 in league play. Tomorrow night, they play Oklahoma for a single game before hitting the road this weekend. In other sports news, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals split the four-game home series against the Tulsa Drillers. The Nats lost Friday night with a final score of 5-4. Then, after winning 5-2 on Saturday, the Naturals fell with a final of 8-2. With the pair of losses, the Naturals are 5-11 on the season. The team is back on the road tonight as it opens a four-game set against the Springfield Cardinals. Tonight, there's a 50% chance of showers, mostly after midnight, and a low of 56 degrees in northwest Arkansas. There's a 30% chance of rain and a low of 58 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, there is a 70% chance of showers with afternoon thunderstorms likely. Temperatures will rise to a high of 59 degrees in northwest Arkansas and 62 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley, then fall to around 45 to 50 degrees in the late morning. Tomorrow night, there is a 60% chance of rain with lows from 34 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 39 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. On April 3rd, Southwestern Electric Power Company filed an application with the Arkansas Public Service Commission to build a new extra-high-voltage transmission line from eastern Benton County to central Carroll County. SWEPCO says the upgrade is necessary to better serve growing electrical needs in northwest Arkansas. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, certain affected property owners don't want a major power line in their backyard.
Six routes have been proposed for the new 150-foot-wide, 50-mile-long, 345,000-volt transmission line. The preferred way begins at SWEPCO's new Shipe Road substation at Centerton and runs somewhat parallel to an existing lower-voltage transmission line corridor north of Eureka Springs, ending at a proposed substation to be built along the Kings River northwest of Berryville. SWEPCO spokesperson Peter Main is based in Fayetteville.
It's part of the long-range look at how to ensure future reliability in the region and to identify what the Southwest Power Pool sees as future overloads on the existing system by bringing in new transmission capacity that will relieve those overloads.
Back in 2008, Southwest Power Pool, a nine-state transmission organization, ordered SWEPCO, a regional transmission provider, to construct a new high-power line to ensure both regional and interstate electrical transmission.
They're single-pole structures with the individual cross-arms off the side. They're single steel pole structures to minimize the visual impact.
The so-called Shipe-Kings River Project will serve to transmit electricity generated by coal and natural gas power stations in eastern Oklahoma and northwest Arkansas. An environmental impact study released March 13th found construction and operation will only have minor impacts on natural and human resources. And while alternative northern and southern routes would avoid many urban, scenic, and recreational areas, they would greatly increase the cost of construction, Peter Main said. He also said building the new transmission line in existing lower power transmission corridors would require doubling the corridor width to accommodate both lines, which is not practical due to existing right-of-way barriers.
There are existing corridors in various places. They don't get you everywhere you need to go. So existing corridors are part of the many, many factors that are considered.
The preferred route will cut a swath through Wolf Ridge, an upscale residential development high above the White River in northern Carroll County. Property owner Jim Helwig received notification from SWEPCO, postmarked March 29th. He moved to Wolf Ridge in 1998. He works as a geologist for the oil industry. He leads the way to the back porch, which reveals a panoramic view of the White River Valley.
And in the distance, you can actually see the hills of Missouri. And then comes Holiday Island, you can see, and then Beaver Town. That's Butler Creek with the old broken bridge across it. And then where that small island is, about 3/4 of a mile north of here, that's where the preferred route of the power line will be.
Jim Helwig's spouse, Patricia, a retired geologist, paleontologist, is upset the utility has staked a claim on one of the most scenic areas along the White River.
Yes, there are fewer people here, but there's a tremendous input of tourists who come here and fish on the White River and boat on the White River.
Eileen Powell and her spouse, Mark Armstrong, relocated from New Orleans several years ago and built a new home on 100 acres just down the mountain.
But we came up here after Katrina and that man-made disaster wiping out my house in New Orleans. And so we came up here to get a different way of life and to build our dream house. And now we're faced with another man-made disaster that could actually wipe us and cripple us again.
These neighbors are concerned about deforestation and herbicide application along the power line cut, not to mention possible health effects from exposure to the buzzing transmission lines. No state or federal standards exist, and scientific studies are not conclusive, but the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences has long suggested the power industry should site transmission lines away from human habitation to reduce exposure. So in recent weeks, Eileen Powell and a group of affected neighbors set up an advocacy website called Save the Ozarks and called a regional meeting of concerned citizens.
You know, I just see this community coming together and hoping to, you know, to resolve something for the benefit of the entire community.
Bud and Patty Barter purchased an old cabin on the White River, which they've renovated. Now a transmission line might be built several hundred feet from their place.
We have a small, I guess if you will, maybe an acre and a half of old pine forest. Pine trees are 70, 80 feet tall. And that's what's going to be taken out with this right away.
Then there's Joe and Delnita Faust, who purchased their property in Wolf Ridge back in 1983 and spent the next decade working second jobs to build a house on 13 groomed acres.
We lived in a little small town in Texas, and we took a second job reading water meters, which paid us exactly what the payment on the land was, and we read water meters for 10 years to pay the land off.
Donita Faust says they live on a mountain paradise.
We have thousands of birds. We have a garden. My husband raises bees. And these are things that won't come back.
The U.S. Department of Interior and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service cite federally listed threatened and endangered species, including the Ozark cavefish, several bats, and birds, and have requested intensive surveys. and to allow 300 feet leeway around any cave, sinkhole, losing stream, or spring. The Arkansas Natural Resources Commission has requested SWEPCO to utilize best management practices and compensatory mitigation under the Clean Water Act if any wetlands are lost due to construction. Native Arkansan and chemist Pat Costner owns 135 forested acres north of Eureka Springs. When she got notice several weeks ago that the new transmission line will bisect her place diagonally, 1,000 feet from her solar-powered homestead.
I just felt like, my heart just dropped to my feet.
Costner spends a lot of time on those feet traveling the world. She's a semi-retired senior scientist with Greenpeace International. She found SWEPCO's environmental impact statement to be boilerplate and without merit, and has secured an attorney and is filing a petition to intervene in SWEPCO's filing of a Certificate of Environmental Compatibility and Public Need to the Public Service Commission. She, along with Save the Ozarks, have until May 2nd, but plan to file for an extension beyond the 30-day comment period to better prepare their case. They've requested SWEPCO under the Freedom of Information Act to provide a list of all affected landowners. In the environmental impact statement, Costner's 135 acres is described simply as woodlands. But to Costner, it's much more than that.
I have done my best to keep, 134 of them as pristine as they were when I acquired them. And in their evaluation, in their comparisons, in their descriptions of roots, in their criteria, pristine land or semi-pristine land has zero value.
Nearly 800 acres will be required for easement for the preferred transmission line, and if property owners refuse to convey it, the land will be condemned under utility right-of-way eminent domain law. Construction of the transmission line and new substation along the Kings River, pending approval by the Arkansas Public Service Commission, is scheduled to begin next summer. It will take 2 years to complete. The preferred route will cost nearly $117 million, paid for by companies that utilize a transmission line, as well as SWEPCO customers who can expect a rate increase of 51 cents per 1,000 kilowatt hours used. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
More information is available at swepco.com and savetheozarks.org. This is Ozarks at Large. Each week, Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas, shares the latest business and political news from around the state. Today, he has news about tax cuts, the governor's race, and Walmart's new sustainability goals.
Former 4th District Congressman Mike Ross made it official on Wednesday that he'll seek the Democratic nomination for Arkansas governor in 2014. Ross, who started his formal campaign announcement tour in his hometown of Prescott, has been mulling the race since January when Democratic Attorney General Dustin McDaniel dropped his bid after admitting to an inappropriate relationship with a Hot Springs attorney. Former Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter has already declared he'll seek the Democratic nomination for governor. Republicans Asa Hutchinson and Curtis Coleman have also announced. Congressman Tim Griffin sent a letter to Rex Tillerson, Chairman and CEO of ExxonMobil Corporation, urging Exxon to support the Central Arkansas Water Utility's request to relocate a section of the burst Pegasus pipeline. After striking a deal to garner a supermajority of votes for the private option health insurance plan, state lawmakers approved about a dozen tax-cutting measures that could lead to nearly $170 million in reduced state revenues in future years. The tax cut bills included income tax reform, capital gains taxes, the grocery tax reduction, and a sales tax on utilities for manufacturers. Also, lawmakers supported tax breaks for dentists, agricultural entities, veterans, and timber harvesters. Walmart CEO Mike Duke announced new goals in the retail giant's efforts to ramp up its sustainability efforts. By the end of 2020, the company committed to install solar power on at least 1,000 rooftops and facilities, to purchase more renewable energy, to procure off-site renewable energy from utility-scale projects such as large wind projects, micro-hydro projects, and geothermal purposes, increase LED usage in sales floor lighting, parking lots, and other applications. Home BancShares, parent company of Centennial Bank, posted higher first quarter net income from a year ago on the strength of an improving loan portfolio. A Conway-based bank holding company said it achieved first quarter net income of $17.5 million compared to $14.5 million 1 year ago. Home BancShares also announced a 2-for-1 stock split. Simmons First National reported first quarter earnings of $5.9 million compared to about $6.3 million 1 year ago. The Pine Bluff-based banking company disclosed merger-related expenses that had some effect on its bottom line. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com. It is Monday, April 22nd, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This may be one of the stranger conversations we've ever had.
We've had a lot.
Yes, we have. Have you heard of the Mental Wrestling Federation?
I don't think so.
Okay, full disclosure.
No, wait. Actually, I think I have. Yes, I have.
Okay. Full disclosure, this is not a nonprofit organization. In fact,
the guys
who have started it really hope it'll be for profit.
It'll be for profit. Mm-hmm.
Rob Selby and Richard Davis. 10 years ago, we were making movies with them. Frog Hair, a romantic comedy set on a golf course. It was shown at some film festivals, but it never made it.
Yes, you've told me about this.
Never made it to the big screen. So they turned to other ventures, including a trivia game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same kind of crazy that said, let's make a high-def movie long before a filmmaker could buy a high-def camcorder for $2,000 or edit the results without a high-def computer kicked in. And it grew up to be the Mental Wrestling Federation, which Rob describes as a hybrid of Quiz Bowl, Jeopardy, a bowling league, and a golf tournament.
Awesome.
And yes, the winner gets a professional wrestling-style belt.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing. There's a prize of $20,000 available to the top team.
Mm-hmm.
64 teams, 2 conferences, 4 divisions in each conference.
So sort of March Madness bracket. Think that.
Exactly.
Right.
The teams can be any number of players, but only 1, 2, 3, or 4 can play live.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs $1,000 for a team to enter.
Right.
A lot of money, but it could be really interesting. This is going to happen starting April 29th on Monday or Wednesday evenings at Buffalo Wild Wings in Fayetteville. The deadline to register is today.
Okay.
So check out mentalwrestlingfederation.com. It could be cool.
It could be. I look forward to this. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
But man of man is this, all nations in him are blessed. All things are done by his will. He spoke to the sea and the sea stood still. Now ain't that a witness for my Lord?
Robert Keith McFerrin was born March 19, 1921 in Marianna in Lee County, then went on to international acclaim as a baritone opera singer, a music teacher, and for fathering a subsequent generation of musicians, including Bobby McFerrin Jr.
Nicodemus was a man desired to know how a man can be born when he is old.
The son of a Baptist preacher, Robert McFerrin was the 4th of 8 children. He gained attention for his singing and whistling talents early on, but was only allowed to sing gospel music. He attended grade school in Memphis, Tennessee. It was only when McFerrin began high school in St. Louis, Missouri, that he began formal, non-gospel music instruction.
In the morning when I rise, in the morning when I rise, in the morning when I rise, give me Jesus, give me Jesus.
In the 1940s, Robert McFerrin attended Fisk University for a year, was drafted and served in the Army, and then returned to college. And he kept singing. He moved to New York City in 1948 and married vocalist Sarah Copper in 1949. The same year, he made his operatic debut in Verdi's Rigoletto. McFerrin also sang in the world premiere of Troubled Island, composed by fellow Arkansaser William Grant Still. McFerrin's January 1955 debut with the Metropolitan Opera in Aida was the first time a black male had sung with the New York company. Unlike Marian Anderson's celebrated debut 3 weeks earlier as the first black female to sing a principal role at the New York Met, McFerrin's debut went largely unheralded.
Yes, who is my woman now? Who is, and you must laugh and sing and dance for two instead of
In 1958, Robert McFerrin and family moved to Los Angeles, California. McFerrin had been contracted by film director Otto Preminger to sing the part of Porgy in Preminger's film version of George Gershwin's opera, Porgy and Bess. In addition to singing the part, McFerrin worked with Sidney Poitier, who played Porgy on screen, to teach Poitier to correctly lip-sync the songs. The soundtrack and film were both successes. McFerrin set up a vocal studio and stayed in California for 15 years before returning to St. Louis to perform and teach.
Vendeste il mio bene, poco e nulla per loro sconviene, ma mia figlia impagabil tesor, arrendete o seppur disarmata, questa man per voi fur occurrenta. Terra più uomo potenta, se dei figli difende l'onor. Per la volta, assassini, assassini, aprite il portal, porta assassini, ma aprite.
Despite McFerrin's many accomplishments on his own, his name may be best known through his musical children. Daughter Brenda McFerrin as a vocalist and Robert McFerrin Jr., or Bobby McFerrin, as a multiple Grammy Award-winning vocalist and conductor as well. McFerrin Jr. enjoyed an international pop smash in 1988 with the song Don't Worry, Be Happy. It was the first a cappella song to ever hit number one in the U.S., in addition to adorning countless t-shirts, ball caps, and Big Mouth, Billy Bass animatronic singing Fish. Of his father, the younger McFerrin said, "His work influenced everything I do musically." Robert McFerrin Sr. suffered a stroke in 1989 that affected his speech, but not his singing. He continued to perform for years afterward. In 2003, Opera America awarded McFerrin a Lifetime Achievement Award. Robert McFerrin Sr. died November 24, 2006, in St. Louis, where he had lived since the 1970s. Having shaped many lives through music and teaching, Robert McFerrin was 85 years old. Here in its entirety is Arkansaser Robert McFerrin of Marianna and Lee County with His Name So Sweet, showcasing McFerrin's gospel origins combined with his operatic training.
Just come from the fountain, I'm just from the fountain.
Laura just come from the fountain, his name so sweet. Where Laura just come from the fountain, I'm just from the fountain. Laura just come from the fountain, his name so sweet. Oh, sinner, do you love Jesus? Yes, yes, I do love Jesus. Sinner, do you love Jesus? His name so sweet. Well, Lord, I just come from the fountain. I'm just from the fountain. Lord, I just come from the fountain. His name so sweet. Last leader, do you love Jesus? Yes, yes, I do love Jesus. Leader, do you love Jesus? His name so sweet. Well, Lord, I just come from the fountain. I'm just from the fountain. Lord, I just come from the fountain. His name so sweet. Zanella, do you love Jesus? Yes, yes, I do love Jesus. Elder, do you love Jesus? His name so sweet. Just come from the fountain, I'm just from the fountain. Lord, I just come from the fountain, his name so sweet. Well, Lord, I just come from the fountain, I'm just from the fountain. Lord, I just come from the fountain, his name so sweet.
Arkansas, Robert McFerrin of Marianna and Lee County with His Name So Sweet. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansongs is Keith Merks. For more information, visit arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
There are a couple of things you should know about Christina Tobin. First, she's a seasoned veteran of political races. Only in her early 30s, she became interested in politics at age 11, and at age 17, her father ran for governor as the Libertarian candidate. She's since worked with candidates like Ralph Nader and many others. She also dislikes the two-party system and has helped create the nonpartisan organization Free and Equal. The group, she says, is interested in shifting power away from the traditional political parties and, as she puts it, back to the individual voter. In the last presidential election, Free and Equal hosted an open debate attended by candidates from the Libertarian, Green, Constitution, and other parties. Last week, Christina Tobin was in Arkansas to drum up support for the Free and Equal event at Verizon Arena in Little Rock, June 22nd. She says her desire to open the ballot to more people is firmly rooted in watching her father run for governor of Illinois in 1998.
I saw him wrongfully knocked off the ballot and learned at 17 years of age that third parties, independents, have to get 25,000 signatures to get on the ballot in Illinois, while only 5,000 for Democrats and Republicans, and that didn't seem very free and equal. And a couple years later, I helped Dad get on the ballot successfully as, at that time, lieutenant governor. And then 2 years later, Ralph Nader gave me a call and said, Christina, you're the only one that has experience. You're the only one, is how he said that, has experience.
That's a pretty good invitation.
Wow, right, it was. and that you have experience, and I took the job across the political spectrum. I've always been an independent. And it's just blown up from there. Got the Green Party on the ballot in 06 in Illinois. Went overseas for 2-3 years in between to Bali, Indonesia. Took a break. And then became national for Nader in 08 and successfully gathering and coordinating over 500,000 signatures throughout the United States as his national ballot access coordinator. So between 08 and 12, I worked full-time on the side building up Free and Equal, moderated 4 gubernatorial debates, a Senate debate, and so on, and hosted forums at Cato Institute, first electoral forum with Ralph Nader sitting there at Cato. Mm-hmm. And brought together leaders at UW-Madison. It's just really building that foundation that people can believe in, not doubt. We're truly here to break the two-party system.
What has to happen for that stranglehold to be, let's just say, loosened?
Well, I think that social media and technology is a super powerful tool. And so we have this kickoff from the Larry King debate. Over 20 million people viewed it, top 10 trending on Twitter. So we're going to take it up to the next level. And so this June 22nd, we're holding a United We Stand Festival. at the Verizon Arena in Little Rock. We have grassroots leaders on the ground from the head of Occupy Little Rock to Tea Parties, Republican Share, Libertarians, Greens, Independents.
So this is not about issues, because you're getting the Occupy movement, you're hoping to have Occupy movement people, Tea Partiers together. There's little they agree on. What you're trying to do is say, open up the ballot system. Let's get more people on the ballot. Let's get more ideas out there.
Way bigger. Actually, they agree on more things than they do not. Like, for example, they're against the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, SOPA, you know, the drones war, drug war, these really important issues that aren't discussed in the mainstream media. So actually, I was inspired by an interview Judge Napolitano when Fox Freedom Work was around. He did an interview with Dr. Ron Paul and Ralph Nader, and Freenico has been endorsed by both of those individuals who came together uniting against the establishment. And, you know, two-party system's been playing us for centuries now, intentionally dividing us. And so this movement is the kickoff at the United We Stand Festival, again, at the Verizon Arena on June 22nd. It's the kickoff for a university bus tour we're going to have, 10-stop bus tour. I'm going to be hopping on a bus and going county by county, state by state, and meeting all the local press and bringing together music. Music is the key, inspiring the youth to essentially, well, run for office in 2014. And we're going to launch a national database that will give them a free and equal chance, a level playing field of actually winning, because the system is rigged. And so we're here to fix that, and we have a long-term solution.
Let me play cynical devil's advocate for a moment.
Go for it.
As you said, it's been a two-party system for a long time. You can go back to when they were called Whigs and Federalists. It's been two parties, basically. There's been a lot of efforts over time to try to break through, to try, you know, there was John Anderson in 1980. There was Ralph Nader, Ross Perot. But it never has really done more than kind of chip away. What would make a difference this time, or 4 years or 8 years from now?
Social media and technology. That's the key. That's what our founding fathers were missing. They themselves weren't perfect. They became a part of the party system, but the origins of the Constitution mentions no parties. And again, I want to repeat, parties don't work. Parties can't be fixed from within. You know, Ron Paul is a prime example of that. Look what happened to him in Florida. And I've been on the end of the National Libertarian Green Party, and I've seen firsthand as a party gets bigger nationally, bad seeds come in and it's infiltrated. So what makes it different is the power of social media and technology. Who would have ever thought this group by the name of Free and Equal, freeandequal.org, came out of really nowhere in 2012 last year, a presidential debate, 20 million people viewed, top 10 trending on Twitter. So social media technology and the national database that we're building with Free and Equal. We're also launching a Free and Equal network that's not about pushing information out, but pulling it in and building others.
20 million viewed didn't translate into that many votes. And I will see your optimistic social media and counter with a cynical Citizens United decision. So much money goes to the two major parties. That's tough. Would you agree that it will take more than Twitter or Facebook or Instagram to battle that kind of money?
Well, sometimes you have to use the system, the tools that they make against them. So I definitely am already exploring the possibility of launching a super PAC, a separate entity from our nonprofit, of which that super PAC, in fact, all the candidates that support will be against super PACs. But however, if they have all in common, like again, against the NDAA, SOPA, all the things I listed before across the spectrum, you know, 10, 20 point, pretty basic plan that we Americans, for the most part, can agree with, they'll be funded. So not only will they be supported on the basis of when somebody goes onto a national database, let's say there's 8, 12, 15 people running for a county office here, you're going to see all of them. You're going to see how much money they're getting. If a super PAC is donating to that candidate, maybe we don't know the amount, but we sure can find out who's on the board of that super PAC. I mean, that's pretty easy to find. So, you know, I think a lot of candidates, as the integrity comes to the surface through this national database and a light shines on it, the cockroaches are going to scatter.
Christina Tobin is the founder of the Free and Equal Organization, and she was in Arkansas last week to discuss the group's event at Verizon Arena in Little Rock, June 22nd. You can learn more at freeandequal.org. This weekend, more than 20 poets, some from here, some from other places, will read their work during the Burning Chair readings at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. This week, we'll hear five of the participating poets, one each day, read. We begin with Matthew Henriksen of Fayetteville, one of the organizers of the weekend's event.
Today I'm going to read a poem called Baby, which I wrote when my wife was pregnant with our first child, and I didn't know at the time what the gender was. And I intentionally wrote this, which usually I don't do. My poems are often more spontaneous. And one of the things I think is interesting about it in the lead up to what's coming with the poetry festival is my friends Fairfield and Jared White, who are poets, just had a baby and are bringing their baby. And they were visiting right after I'd written this poem, and we'd gone out to Devil's Den to hang out during the day. And there was a big storm came in, and I read this to them in the car ride as the storm was hitting. We'd like, you know, lightning and stuff flashing. And I didn't realize that at the time, you know, when you write a poem, you don't necessarily know if it's a good one, or I don't know if it's going to be a good one or not, or if it's one that's going to stick, because I get so invested in what I'm trying to do with the poem and what its possibilities are. And also, when you're in the composition and revision process, the limitations of the poem are very apparent. So anyway, I read this poem in the middle of this awful storm, and it's kind of a crude look at children, I guess, and parental relationships. And I think it changes a little bit, but they just were sort of like, you should read that when you're in New York next time. And so I did. I've been reading this one. It's called Baby. Bring the fatted worm to the altar. I will pin down the skin. The body opened, what you imagined. An orphan cannot say his father is no man. A worm cannot say, no, no, don't do this. But the fatted baby can say, when he is older, I don't remember what my father cut from me. At the back of each eye beyond my death, I see a future without automobiles, save two chestnut Ford Mavericks in an abandoned salvage yard. Well, after my child has died, I will see the sun, as it will be on the backs of those cars, in the beginning of this new and ancient and only reality. I can hardly bring myself to flip the blinker. I can hardly turn the wheel right. If I break down like the sun weeps, my child will hear the arietta in Beethoven's last sonata, and an image will strike my child's eye, optimistic beyond repair. That day will squeeze all that is holy from the body and set it down like a fish on a rock under the sun's violent love.
Matthew Henriksen of Fayetteville is the husband of Katie Henriksen, host of Note on KUAF. Matthew is also one of more than 20 poets scheduled to read as part of a Ozark Small Press Poetry Festival Friday and Saturday at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. You can learn more about the readings at burningchair.blogspot.com. Kickstarter is a crowdsourcing website that has allowed a number of artists to collect the necessary funding for the project of their choice. The website has helped anyone from filmmakers to clothing designers to musicians. Dirtfoot is a Shreveport, Louisiana-based band that has once again turned to Kickstarter to finance its latest album. Last month, Nathan Woods, Daniel Brightup, Derek Russell, Matt Hazelton, Scott Girardi, and Jay Bratley performed at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. While they were in town, they stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio. During our conversation, Matt explained to me where the band's name comes from.
The name is just, originally it was... It's just something that kind of explains the type of the feel of the band. I mean, it's just kind of grounded, you know, real, you know, here we are, you know, kind of music. You know, put your feet in the mud. You know, let's get dirty. Let's make music together.
You don't see people dancing normally to Dirtfoot.
And when he says that, that's another part of it. It's the crowd is definitely part of the group. And we've always described him as the seventh member of the band, because their part in the music that we make is really important. You know, Every once in a while, we do end up at a show where there's, you know, just a small number of people there, and it's hard, you know, it's hard to get that, you know, because they do play such a big part in it. There's call and response type things that happen, and so they're doing their part, we're doing ours, you know.
When I was talking to your rep, she mentioned that this is a new configuration for the band.
Right. Derek here is a brand new boy right
that
here.
Would be me. New fish.
A new fish.
That's me. And I just play drums.
Just play drums.
Just drums.
Just drums. He offers more of a heavier sound than we had before, more of a rock sound, I think. He adds that to it, and I was running through. I was just playing an acoustic guitar, running direct for the longest time, and recently, I'm playing through an electric guitar now and an amp. So we won a
John Lennon songwriting competition for the New Orleans Jazz Music Fest thing, and or not Music Fest, but the New Orleans Jazz competition. And the grand prize was a Epiphone Casino John Lennon
style guitar.
So he quickly changed his.
I mean, it's too pretty of a guitar not to take with us.
Sounds
you know?
Pretty too.
We're more electrified nice. Than we've ever been before in the past. So if you've come to, if you've seen Dirtfoot before, you haven't seen this Dirtfoot. You need to come see us.
Why the decision to be more electrified?
It just happened.
Organic. Just like he won a guitar, so we.
And that's really how this whole, I mean, from the get-go, this band has always been kind of, you know, you just go with whatever. I mean, we don't have a specific sound that we're trying to achieve. It's just, you know, whatever, hey, this sounds good, let's do that. Well, let's go that, let's do that, you know. There's no set in stone, this is who we are or what we are, you know. It's just we're making music and whatever sounds good. And it'll change again, you know. I mean, before, you know.
It's also feel. It's also feeling good. Like, if we're working on a song, like we've written two new songs recently that basically were written in about a day. I mean, they came out of nowhere and they just felt really good, and they became
bass and drum.
You know, they became heavy. They became part of the set list immediately. But it feels good. And if songs don't feel good, they get put on the back burner. And if something somebody's doing doesn't feel good, then we work with it. You know, it's just, right. You know, it really is a, you know, kind of an organic creation.
And those songs that get put on the shelf for a little while, maybe the new kind of sound, maybe those songs will work with that. And so we have actually, since the sound has changed a little bit, pulled off the shelf some of those older tunes that work this way. So we're playing those now. So everything changes all the time.
Let's see, you brought me a CD here. Is this your most recent one?
No, that was our last studio record. Since then, we recorded a live album.
This is a Dirtfoot Bone Session, so that's your last studio. So what's the name of your live album?
Live and in Prison. We recorded it in a Wade Correctional Prison in Homer, Louisiana, in front of about 250, 300 inmates. Which was pretty intense, you know. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'd say it was very intense.
It was very intense. We recorded a music video. We brought in a buddy of ours, William Sadler, the actor who's in like Shawshank Redemption, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. He was the Grim Reaper, the death in that. He played the part of the warden, and we recorded a big music video and
what Matt's left out is that this thing all got started because. Of a video, music video, and it was like, well, here's an idea. You guys are bad guys. Y'all all end up in jail, and that's how the band actually is formed. And we're like, and we liked the idea. We started putting it together. It's like, well, if we're going to be in jail in front of prisoners, pretending like we're playing, we might as well play. And then the warden said, well, do a show. And then like, well, if we're going to be there with cameras, we might as well record it. And it went from a, you know, music video to a live album to a DVD with a documentary and. And then we realized that we didn't have any money to pay for all that. So we did a Kickstarter campaign, and we raised a bunch of money, and we paid for it and even printed vinyl because of it.
Nice segue, Jay.
Thank you. Did you know where I'm going? Did you know where I'm going? So we're recording a new album now.
That's what I was wondering.
We're about to record a new record in April. April the 8th through the 16th, we'll be at Blade Studios in Shreveport, and working with Brady Blade. He's going to be our producer, and... capturing this or trying to capture this new sound, and once again we don't have any money to pay for it, so we are going to be putting up a Kickstarter campaign in the very near future, and we're going to and it will be details to be announced.
I want to ask you a little bit about this album that you brought me, the Bone Sessions.
Right.
The song Watusi. You've told me that people don't necessarily dance to your songs, but that sounds like a dancing song.
It is a dancing song. It's also an animal. But
I know people dance to our songs. They just don't dance like you would normally see people dancing.
People dance. I mean, it is
differently.
It's primal.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's
snakes and strychnine kind of dancing.
No, I mean people get crazy around, too. People get crazy and they dance constantly throughout the song the sets. You know, but that song is the Watusi, and we, you know, I really don't know what the Watusi looks like. I'd like to. I've seen diagrams like of how it's done, but I haven't seen it in
motion.
Remember
that dancing,
you know?
Baby computer thing? The dancing baby? That's kind of like the.
That's
it's
the
kind of like the robot, but not really the robot.
They did the robot in the 50s, man.
Rolling beers in the upstairs cup, a rattle, rattle, rattle machine. Let's take the people, pop a rotsy up, a rattle, rattle, rattle machine. But you really don't love a rattle, rattle, rattle machine.
If I was to hand the CD to someone and told them, you know, this is the one song that you have to listen to off this album, what would it be?
Let me see it.
It's probably Rhinestone Ring is one that everybody likes a lot.
Oh. I'd say Devoted Mama.
Oh, of course.
Well, you know, Cast My Plans is a really good one here. Rhinestone Ring's a good one.
Just tell him to put the CD on and listen to it.
Yeah. Mama.
A couple of you mentioned Rhinestone.
Why? Rhinestone Ring's a good one.
Why?
It's just got a good feel to it. It's
groovy.
Good riding groove.
I was going to say Snappin' Turtle.
There's some slow ones on there, too. I like Snappin' Turtle.
Well, Snappin' Turtle's got a real cool, like, you know, creepy, don't go in there. There's somebody that's going to get you kind of vibe, you know.
Well, if there's two spectrums of the CD that you can think of what Dirtfoot is, I would say Rhinestone Ring and Fall in Love. Those are two, like, the two Dirtfoot songs that you could probably be like, oh, that's Dirtfoot.
They go from here to here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Extremes.
I want you. You say love's a Christmas tree. I'll put a star upon your head and you won't have to sing this song no more. I'm falling in love. I'm falling in love with you. I'm falling in love.
It's, of course, really hard for us to look at our own music and say, this is the one that,
sure.
You know, because we, you know, have a history with each song, you know, and so it's you know, we got a lot of love for all of them.
Sometimes we're surprised, like, we have our first record, there's a song called Little Bit of Rum, and it's a good, great song, we really like it, but that, you know, that's been like the most downloaded song on iTunes or whatever, and you're just like, oh, okay, well,
really?
Yeah, and it's just, you know, we expect it to be something that we have a song called My Girl that everybody really likes, and you think it would be that, but you know, it's sometimes these other little tunes that pop up, so it's you know, I don't know. There again, we actually filter the songs ourselves. It goes through, if it doesn't go through six guys and doesn't pass, then we don't play it. So like I said, by the time it leaves the band, it's pretty much it's gone through six check marks. So hopefully other people will dig it too.
The six band members of Dirtfoot stopped by the Firman Garner Performance Studio last month while they were visiting Fayetteville for a performance. The band has started a Kickstarter campaign to raise $16,000 for its third studio album. The campaign ends May 10th, and more information is available at dirtfoot.com. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from Dog Party USA, hosting the 4th annual Singing for Space picnic April 27th at 5:30 p.m. Located on Highway 112 in Taneytown, this family event features food, live music, and more to friendly, vaccinated dogs and their owners. Proceeds will benefit Spay, Arkansas. Tickets are available at the door. More information at dogpartyusa.com. And before we go, a quick congratulations to Arkansas baseball head coach Dave Van Horn, who has been selected as manager for the 2014 USA Baseball Collegiate National Team. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Springdale. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. I'll be back alongside my co-host, Kyle Kellums. Thanks again for listening, and have a happy Earth Day.